What would happen if instead of composing predetermined assignments, college composition students could compose whatever they want to compose? What would happen if students could set their own deadlines and grade their own work? Find out as Assistant Professor Mason Joyner and I explore these questions with a few of our fellow English department colleagues. I'm Monica Mankin, and this is the English 101 Experiment.
Welcome to the English 101 Experiment podcast. I am Mason Joyner. I am an assistant professor of English at Delgado Community College. Here is my colleague,
Monica Mankin. I am an associate professor of English also here at Delgado, and we have with us today our guest.
Yeah, Ari Zeiger, and I am an associate professor of English here at Delgado.
And we always like to ask people, you know, how long have you been here at Delgado? Mm-hmm.
I've been here since, fall of 2011. I've seen some things, y'all.
Yeah. Yeah, you and me both. We remember that Blair campus that doesn't exist anymore. I think that's where we met each other, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. We were in the wilderness.
Yeah, and Ari and I feel like early on, I guess it was back when we were starting academic literacy, developed kind of a mentor-mentee relationship there. And I feel like we worked really well together.
Yeah. You had your pick of different units that you kind of template units or that you could select from. And you sort of vibed with the one that I created, you know, around this high level of North Star of virtue, and then instantiated through different modules and an anchor text, you know, Marcus Aurelius meditations.
Yeah, which I love dearly to this day.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, our focus today is reflection, right? What have we learned? And so we appreciate you being here, Ari, to guide us through our reflective process. So yeah, if you want to take it away, I know you've got some questions.
I do have some questions. And you know, I always love this idea of truth in advertising. And so the title of this episode, you know, that we sort of have pinned is What We Learned. And, you know, I would just invite us to like riff, whoever wants to go first on like, okay, like what did we learn?
Yeah. Monica, do you want to start?
I was gonna silently gesture to you. There are many lessons, I think, that came out of the experiment last semester for me. And it's hard to kind of pick a point to start with. But I suppose maybe one of the ways to start is to maybe talk about what I'm doing differently this semester.
Yeah, therein lies what we've learned, perhaps.
Right, yeah. So last semester, as if listeners may recall, when we talked with Abby and Andrew about kind of the day-to-day, we did talk a lot about the way kind of appearing as you walk it. And there's a little less of that this time around. It's a, I feel like I've trekked this territory before, so I'm being more of a guide as we're hiking into the unknown. Yeah. We'll get to that unknown here eventually, but I'm spending a lot of time sort of engaging students with different kinds of texts. So we started with poems, and we did a really deep analysis of the poems that we read and discussed deeply about, like, what is it that we can learn from about composition from these poems. They chose one of them to imitate. We reflected on the process of imitation, particularly the poems, and why that was either hard or, you know, or maybe it came easy and why. And then we've moved now into essays, and we looked at two very different essays, and we did kind of the same practice, but we were able to focus on a lot of different things, mainly from even just like what is an essay? What is a paragraph? Why in this essay do we have five fairly uniform paragraphs, and in this essay we have two very non-uniform paragraphs? Mm-hmm. What's happening here? And talking about writers' choices and the style, the way our style choices lead to these effects on our audience. And again, we're now engaging in kind of imitating a section of one of these essays. And then next week, we're going to move into articles and kind of talk about what's the difference between an essay and an mm-hmm. article. Mm-hmm. And go and then into a podcast and then into, like, to kind of touch upon these things that I know students want to work on, because we already sort of brainstormed possible projects. I feel like I'm doing a better job of laying down the foundation and giving them a lot more concrete practice mm-hmm. so that when it's time to develop the project, they can pull directly from the journal. And if they decide that they want to go in a different direction, they have a ton of information about making choices as a composer, mm-hmm. as a writer.
Yeah. For me, I would say some of what I learned was, like, tiny, but it worked so well that I can't imagine not doing it in any class now. Simple things like putting a like minute-by-minute agenda up on the board or the projector.
Minute by minute.
Well, you know, I mean, okay. 15 minutes here, okay. 30 minutes, you know, like just plotting out the actual mm-hmm.
yeah.
course.
And I've seen that agenda, period. Right? Like, so you are chunking by mm-hmm. mm-hmm. timestamps the duration of certain sections of your course.
And it really helps me use our time most effectively and just go ahead and cross things off my mind that we're just not going to have time to get to, you know, and just, I guess it helps me. And I think it also, you know, at the beginning of class, I throw it up there before class even begins. And I see the students already, like, looking over it, looking ahead at what this class period is going to hold. And I think there's something nice about seeing, here's what we're about to do over the next 50 to 75 minutes. So that, and always starting with, like, morning greetings, having everybody stand up and shake hands, and say good morning. I had one class request, hand sanitizer if we were going to keep doing that. And so I started bringing hand sanitizer.
Yeah, that's fair.
And even something so small as having, like, at a low level, some, like, chill lo-fi beats going in the background the whole class. I turn it on at the start and never turn it off. I may turn it up while we're writing, turn it down while we're discussing. And it creates a really, an atmosphere that I've really enjoyed. So some of the stuff that I learned that I instituted for this experiment, I'm now using across the board, will never not do. Some of the bigger things I'd say, like one, for example, I think maybe last semester, at the start of the experiment, I think perhaps some students maybe got the idea that because this was kind of this experiment is soft on requirements, that meant they didn't really have to do all that much. And so to sort of, I don't know, handle that differently, rather than starting off with this big wide open project where, you know, what do you want to write? Start working on that. Instead of that, as we did before, I'm sort of pushing that to the second half, I think, of the semester, and sort of starting to wade into that pool more at the beginning. So they still have the agency with their first project of the content. However, it is imitating the form of two texts, either one of two texts that we started reading. One is an academic sort of sociological paper. The other one is a pretty complex short story. And so I think that I think is making a difference.
But we won't know.
But we won't know.
Until later mm-hmm. on.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that I also, so I'm keeping an agenda in a little bit different manner. I mm-hmm. think last semester, it was like I was writing everything down after the fact to kind of track what we had done. And this time I'm going in and I used to do this a long time ago and then I stopped and now I'm doing it again, where I just go in and it's, you know, I write on the board the course, Professor Mankin, the date, mm-hmm. and then, like, the, you know, the things that we're going to accomplish in our time together. And I noticed what the effect that that has is that, because we've talked a lot about clocking in, and I think as soon as I start doing that, students are ready. They're taking the notes. They're writing the agenda down, and they're like you said, like kind of processing and thinking about what we're doing today. One thing that I think I was kind of trying to do last semester that I'm doing a better job so far is kind of the what did we learn? What did we learn today? Giving them a few minutes to journal that before we depart, and then spending like the last 2 minutes of class, they kind of call out the things that they're learning. And I really love this because it surprises me, the things that stick, right? And I'm like, I didn't even think about that as a possible thing that you would learn from this experience. And then finally is the recap. So I do the agenda, and then I'll be like kind of like last time in Professor Mankin's 101, we discussed what? So it's forcing them to kind of go back to the notes that they took and the exercises that we did. And I find that that's been really helpful, especially with this 8 o'clock this semester. There are a lot of late students, kind of spotty attendance for a couple already, but it kind of helps bring those students into the fold so that they don't feel completely lost because they missed a class. So those are things that I think I like adding back structure, but not in a way that the students are losing any agency, which I think is what we really valued when we started this project.
Yeah, more of a skeleton, but all of the meat is still theirs, you know?
Yeah.
I really love how you're calling out the idea of continuity within a kind of, just to maybe for the alliteration, within a kind of controlled chaos. I really love that. So many other themes that were coming up here, and in an agency we both mentioned. So I want to come back to that. It's something that we that y'all have talked about before. It's at the heart of this experiment, and I think it allows us to discuss like first principles, right? Like. And where, how do y'all kind of, so it's a, sort of a two-part question. Like one is, so like, what did we learn? It's, you know, what do we want to keep the same? What do we want to carry over? Almost as like the kind of givens. And also just within that, if you kind of, we'll touch on agency as being sort of at the heart of maybe the inspiration for this experiment, and then also how it plays in at the level of, you know, class, right? Yeah.
Okay, so I guess to start with first principles. So if we're taking this term literally, right, which is this idea that it's an assumption that's not deduced from any other assumptions, I'm not sure that it applies because I feel like the experiment is, in fact, a reaction to assumptions that we find problematic about writing instruction.
Almost an interrogation of.
So... And I think really for me, it comes down to like the prescriptive model versus the descriptive model. So, of course, we're not reinventing wheels or creating new composition theories. But I think some of the composition theories that are out there are not in practice. And we see this like in textbooks, right? These textbooks are designed for prescriptive methods of instruction. And we don't want to spend our time with our students telling them what to do. I want to teach them how to write. There's a difference there. And so I think as far as like, what do we value? What do we want to keep the same? It's keeping the actual writing practice at the forefront of what we do.
I think as I was reflecting at the end of the fall semester, preparing for the spring, a phrase that I jotted down, and it wasn't the first time I had thought of it, but it was the first time I had thought of it in a while, that seemed really important to me and has been kind of a touchstone, reminding myself what I want to do in class, is the idea that the classroom should be a place where play happens, not where work happens.
Play. And play with what?
Yeah, with words.
With language.
With language.
The only tool we have as writers. Yeah. And that's where I think, like, the imitations and, like, allowing that freedom to explore different genres, like, it helps the students build their understanding of the possibilities that lay before them instead of just, I need to just do it exactly like this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And or even the process of writing is that whole brainstorm, draft, you know, see a coach, do a peer review.
Yeah.
Revise, edit, submit. And it's like, no, I think processes can be a lot more complicated than that. And they don't all, like, that doesn't work for everybody, right? So even the process of, like, play.
Yeah. And imitation becomes kind of like a game in that way where it's like you see the writer doing something and you're like, oh, that's fun. Can I play? You know?
Yeah,
that's sort of where I'm coming from, I think. What I'm holding on to most this semester.
Yeah, like I wrote down language forward as a note of like something I wanted to talk about.
So yeah.
The language forward approach.
In getting at the kind of question of, you know, like with reflection, it's always like looking back, but then also sort of eyeing what's on the horizon. One way of kind of getting at that question of like, you know, kind of like now what or what are you looking forward to, whether or not like it's something this semester up, you know, or even in future, I kind of want to pose the question this way to kind of get at it, which is, you know, for a student, if either in your class this semester or hypothetically in your class in a future semester, what do you hope that they still remember about the experience being your student in this class in 5 years? Like, even after they've forgotten your name, but they still remember or are animated by X.
I think, I'll go first on this one. I think what I hope most, after they've forgotten who I am or, or, you know, anyone else in the class, I hope they remember, oh, I wrote this really cool thing. Like, I hope they're sitting next to someone, I don't know, over a glass of wine. They're like, oh, man, like 5 years ago in college, I wrote this really cool thing that's relevant to what we're talking about. That's, I guess, that's pretty much it for me.
Yeah, I like that. I like that I made this thing.
Yeah.
And it was cool. I keep thinking about this question that you asked us, you know, last week when we were kind of thinking about this episode and this idea of what is the paradise. And for me, it does go beyond the classroom. It goes to, you know, or any, the classroom or any measurable outcome that, you know, colleges are so obsessed with. But it goes to the core of citizenship. And do we want a citizenship that just follows directions? Or do we want a citizenship that thinks critically and creatively and has the agency to participate in discourses that are needed for successful democracy? And I realize that, like, it's easy to feel very defeated in terms of that these days. But I think that for me is, like, the hope that it's, like, you are able to be and living in the world, and you know you have a voice, and you know how to use it when you need to. That, yeah, you don't have to remember my name for that.
Yeah.
Mason, do you want to riff off of that same implied question, which is, what's the 10X? What's the nirvana? You know, wave a wand and a miracle happened. You know, what would that be for, you know, for the experiment?
Okay, yeah, I think... I think the wand wave, my mind is going to like what's the nirvana in the classroom, right? And I think it's that we are reading a variety of things, you know, without any pressure from our careers, I suppose, on what we should be reading. Or from our any other authority figure, but like just reading a variety of things and writing creatively, and yeah, I think it's maybe that's overly simple. Just saying, basically, I want every composition class to be a creative writing class. but I guess that's it, really. I mean, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, the one class I'll never forget I took when I was in seventh grade. It was a creative writing class. And while I do remember my teacher's name, I can also tell you, like, oh, I wrote this really cool thing. And I guess that's where it comes from is, you know, I was 13 or 14 and I wrote this awesome short story about, you know, far in the future, people were fighting like sentient velociraptors and I loved it. I loved writing it. And
you
so
were
I guess
world building.
World building. Yeah. So yeah, that's the nirvana for me is just having fun on paper, being creative. Yeah.
What I hear you saying is, I think these are not how I'm hearing you say. Is something like, I want my students to experience what it's like to make something with words. To make something with words. The way that I think about it, and like, why do I quibble endlessly and eternally with phrasing? Writing is never finished. It's just due, right?
Right.
And I said, because it's an artifact. I'm making something, and I can always see an edge, perhaps, that I can that I can tinker with, right? And there's this, and even if it's just a sentence or a phrase, it is this subject-object relationship that I have with it, where I'm like working on it with like elbows out. And I hear that like they are making, they're building something, and it's that gives it a actual physicality, metaphorically speaking, and lends itself to that indelibility that you've mentioned two different times now.
Yeah.
And also, it sounds like you just want to have fun with your students, which is also, I think that's a good goal to have, is to go in and have a great time. Because, I think you've said this, is that, like, misery does not create a good learning environment. And so creating a space where people look forward to being there and they're excited by the choices they're going to be able to make and to share that with others, it's really, I mean, I think that's a good nirvana to have in mind.
And they are working so hard at their play.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And I think to kind of bring it back to the language of education and also like why do this and what inspired this. Like I was kind of thinking back about the reading apprenticeship framework and how, so one of the assumptions that I feel like we're responding to perhaps is this assumption that students are getting sufficient writing instruction so that when they come to us, they're already prepared for where we're going to pick up, you know, the ball and start running with it. And we know that that's becoming less and less the case every year. And now we've got the COVID gap. And then also at a community college, we have students coming back from year, you know, after years and years and years. So I was thinking in some ways that while the reading apprentice apprenticeship framework is really great for making the reading, the thinking that happens when we read visible, it's like, where's the writing apprenticeship framework that makes the discrete skills of writing more visible and accessible to students? And I feel in some ways that that is what is happening. There's like kind of a parallel there that is happening through the imitation and just through writing play and practice and making that visible to the students.
So one of the ways that we can teach in this open and somewhat open-ended way is because we have the kind of confidence, I'll use that word confidence, or just trust in self, that we are walking the talk.
Yes.
I would love for y'all to, I just want to get that question in, like, how you see your own practice as a writer giving you the kind of gravitas or just self-trust of inviting your students to also step into that identity.
You know, so one thing that comes to mind that I did take away, like in a permanent sense, from the reading apprenticeship course was the idea that I'm not a teacher, I'm an advanced learner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not a writing teacher, I'm just someone who likes to write, I guess. And so if I can show that to my students in class, which I always try to do, like to let myself have fun and let them see me having fun writing, that I guess I'm trusting that if they see that, they can be like, oh yeah, that he's having fun. I understand the fun of it. Maybe I can have fun with it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're modeling the grappling, the playing with how many different arrangements can we get out of this one sentence? How many other better words can I use here to say what I'm trying to say? Like, just, play with them. Mm-hmm. And I think we are practicing writers. We get together outside of work and share work and workshop. And I think we are definitely bringing that into our classroom by kind of moving away from peer review into a more kind of MFA style workshop with our students. But a lot of learning happens in that where, and again, it's they're the ones in the driver's seat with thinking critically about what they want to know about their work to make it better. I think being a practicing writer does, like, you have a good point that I can see some faculty feeling like, well, I'm not a practicing writer, but I don't think that has to prohibit
participating as a member in the class that you are teaching.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that we need to participate fully bell to bell with but can we at least at some percentage participate, whether it's in the start of class journaling, or even in the end of class capture take home message, or even if it's in the turn and talk, and we find a student who doesn't have a partner, and we share sort of orally with them. So key. I love this idea of not just modeling the print, the product, but also modeling the process.
Absolutely.
I want to get to the question as soon as I can. The greatest gift I ever got as a teacher was my high school art teacher, Miss Goslin. She was always assigning us different random projects, calligraphy, paper mache, whatever it was. She was always doing it first, and she always made one too. And I said to myself, wait, why doesn't Mr. Bennett, my English teacher, do this?
Right.
What?
That also is something, it sort of keeps you, the teacher, in the mindset that if what I'm asking them to do, I couldn't do myself right now in class.
Are you asking them
exactly
to do it then?
And that doesn't mean the assignment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It can mean the journal. It could mean the riff. It could mean, hey, what's one sentence that you would boil down this paragraph that we're analyzing into right now? And you do it also, right? That's just such a beautiful practice that y'all are bringing in and are able to do so as a result of what you have outside of the classroom, who you are outside of the classroom.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I learned from you, Ari, that I thought was really cool, and I've tried it a little bit, but it's very you, and it's hard to replicate. Mm-hmm. I heard you once talking about how you will often walk into class and start telling an anecdote.
Yes.
I mean, even sitting around this table for this podcast, you've told us at least two, maybe more, like full, complete anecdotes. And that's such a great skill. I don't know if you wanna jump on that at all, but that's I've always admired that.
Yeah, and full credit to other educators for this. When I was going to a professional development at Teachers College at Columbia, this one teacher was always kind of addressing us before the bell in some kind of soft, casual way, and then that always got our attention.
Yeah.
Before class started, and I realized as I reflected to bring it home to this, I realized, oh wait, this educator understands that attention is the holy grail of education.
Yeah.
Attention.
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, my last kind of codas, you know, plural.
I feel like I said a lot today. Pooped. I just appreciate our department for the diversity of voices and practices that are happening and people sharing what they're doing and then like the openness of being able to do something like this to just kind of see what we can learn from it to improve what we're doing, to improve our connections with our students.
And this will be my coda to riff off that, which is we think about this idea of burnout, right?
Mm-hmm.
And burnout lives in education with teachers, certainly. Recently, I've heard this term burn in, which is you aren't sort of, shunted out of the system. You actually just sort of stagnate in the system, burn in. But this project, to me, is not burnout. It's not burn in. It's burn on.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ari. And thank you, listener.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the English 101 Experiment. Special thanks to Christopher Nicotera, instructor of music business at Delgado Community College, for his recording assistance. All music heard during this episode comes from the Free Music Archive. Specific titles and artists are listed on the English 101 Experiment website.